Here we are. It's another episode of the Roller Out the Barrel Vintage Baseball Podcast, talking to vintage baseball players, coast to coast, border to border, all over this great United States of America. Hoorah, vintage baseball! And it's World Tournament Week at Greenfield Village in Dearborn, Michigan, and I really wanted to get an interview in with a guy from a team, a club that I have not interviewed yet. And this gentleman does hit the mark for that. On the phone with me right now, the captain of the Oregon Ganymedes, it's Mark Iron Chest Herman. Can I say Iron Chest? Like, everybody says it like that, right, Mark?
Yes, you have to.
You have no choice. You have to say it like that. Oh, how you doing today?
I'm very good. Doing real good.
Tell me about your prep for the World Tournament as a team, the Oregon Ganymedes from Illinois.
Yeah, this is actually, we've been going there since 2015. So this would be our sixth time we've gone there. This is the highlight of our season. I don't know if people realize how this is such a fun tournament, and it's the only time we get to play 1867 rules. So every the last couple of weeks, we have practices to go over the rules about how they're different and what, you know, that no one bounce outs and about the stealing and about some little quirky rules that we're not used to playing. So, but we're really exciting. Like I said, my team lives for this tournament, and last year it broke our hearts that it got canceled, but we're just thrilled to be coming back this year.
Well, you guys are definitely a team that, you know, we sit there, everybody sits there and goes, oh, you know, that team could beat that team. And boy, who's a sleeper? You know what? Everybody's a sleeper because every club in this tournament can win it.
Oh, they are. And the competition is incredible. And like you said, it's like doing the, you know, the March Madness. If you could pick a perfect bracket, I'd be shocked.
Oh, yeah. That ain't going to happen. That's
no, it's not going to happen. And then you look, you go, oh, they're going to be weak. And then, oh my God, what happened? Well, you never know. They might have gotten new players. Some of their players couldn't have come. They might have had work and they couldn't get out of work, or somebody got hurt. You never know. So, But that's what makes it great, is that year in and year out, the teams are usually really tough and very competitive. And that's what makes it fun.
You mentioned it's the only time of the year you play by 1867 rules. What do you usually play by 1858?
Mostly 1858 and 1860. Yep. That's what most Illinois teams go by. I don't know. It's just evolved that way. I don't know if it's because a lot of our teams have older players and it's easier. And that is what you generally see around here, unless you go to tournaments over the border to another state.
Well, and I think majority of the Ohio teams play 64. Are you familiar with 64 a lot?
Yes, so, we've played it a few times. Mm-hmm.
So explain to everybody what the difference is between 58 and 64.
Well, at 58, you get a free walk back to base if you catch a ball on the fly. There's no stealing. There's no leading off. It's one bounce out all over the place, and you have to play close to the bag, so you can't play anywhere you want to. So it's just a much slower, more strategic hitting. So it's like I said, it's a game that a lot of older folks that have lost a step, they like playing it because it's just a little easier to play.
Who are some of the clubs that you generally see on your schedule? I'm not familiar with your geographical area of clubs very much.
Yeah, we are. Oregon, Illinois is a town of about 3,800 people. We're located about 100 miles due west of Chicago and just in the middle of northern Illinois. We play teams from Chicago, Milwaukee. We used to play the Milwaukee Grays, the Milwaukee Cream Cities. We play the Creston Regulators in Illinois. We would play Salmonok Blue Stockings in Salmonok, Illinois, Chicago Salmon, the DuPage Plowboys. These are all the northern Illinois clubs that are within about a two-hour drive of us. And then if we want to, we can go south and play teams all the way down to St. Louis or further south in Springfield in the middle of the state.
About how many clubs a year, or should I say dates, are you guys scheduling during a season?
Usually we play every other week starting the first week of May. So we, depending on how many tournaments we get where we have multiple teams that we're playing, we could play anywhere from 10 to 15 teams before the World Tournament. is what we usually end up playing.
And then after the World Tournament, it kind of shuts down because of school, or how long do you go?
Yeah, school actually starts next week here. So I will, we start to lose people because of Saturday commitments with Pee Wee soccer and high school football and high school sports. So we might play a few games after the World Tournament, but for the most part, we start shutting down in September at the latest.
Mark, tell me about the history going all the way back with the Oregon Ganymedes, and then bring me up to speed on how you started the club.
Okay. And I was born and raised in Virginia here. My family, we have two infant daughters. We decided that we were looking for a small town with that'd be a great place that you could raise a family. And we chose Oregon. It's a beautiful scenic area. And when I got here, I started doing some local history and looking around. And eventually I got the local newspapers and had read about vintage baseball. There were only a few teams around then. We started in 2005. We formed the team. But I went to the local newspaper archives and I did research just on the town of Oregon and found historical records in the paper that they were playing town ball in the 1860s, and found box scores, and I even found a description of the team uniform in 1870, which was no pictures, but I found a description of the uniform. And so I went around and started talking to a lot of people in town that played softball and baseball and said, hey, you wanted to try this? And people said yes. So we actually recruited a team of baseball enthusiasts and booked some games for some local clubs, and ended up getting some support for buying uniforms and donations for equipment. And we started playing at this Chena School Museum, which is a local museum on the river here. It's a real scenic 1800 school. Has a beautiful lawn out front with a great natural baseball field, all grass, trees in the outfield. It's really a quirky field. And it caught on. I started out, I tried to get a cross section of the town of Oregon, and I got two bankers, a paramedic, which is a good person to have on your team. I got a lawyer, I got a school teacher, I got an insurance salesman, I got a carpenter, I got a plumber. I got all kinds of different walks of life, but they all love playing baseball. And we got uniforms, started playing, and it caught on, and we did pretty well. We've been doing this for 17 years now, and it's been a lot of fun, and we've been going all over the Midwest playing teams showcasing the city of Oregon, and everybody go, oh, you're from Oregon? And Oregon, the city. Oh, you're from Oregon. We thought you came from Oregon State. But no, it's this little city of Oregon, Illinois, which is a beautiful little town here.
If you can get involved with a museum in your town that you have a vintage baseball club, I mean, that's a tremendous help for both, for the museum and for the club.
That's why we did it. This museum, this Chena School Museum, it's a historic schoolhouse, and we restored it. That's one of the things I did. We did research. We did paint scrapings to see what color the walls were. I did all the detail Victorian striping on the inside. It took me 2 years to do that by hand as a volunteer. And then we decided the baseball team would be a way to draw attention. And it does. We'll do a baseball game on a Sunday afternoon, and people pull off the road and stop and get out, and they go into school and they watch us for a while. And then we would go to tournaments and we would hand out brochures, and they go, you know, come to Oregon. It's a beautiful, you know, it's a historic, you know, historic little town on the Rock River. And so we were killing two birds with one stone, but then my guys love playing baseball. It's like, we can do more. And so we start going to tournaments in St. Louis and Chicago, Milwaukee. We've gone to Ohio Cup, and then we applied to go to the Henry Ford World Tournament. That was like the apex for us. That is the best venue in the country as far as we're concerned for vintage baseball. The other ones are nice, but you actually have crowds of people paying money to watch you.
Yeah, it's a different feeling.
It is. I mean, no offense going, some of these other tournaments are nice and we have fun playing, but the only people who are there are wives and girlfriends. And after a while, they don't even care. So you just don't have large crowds for the most part.
And after a while, you mean the third inning.
Yeah, especially if it's hot, no shade. So, but anyway, the World Tournament is great. We have won the farthest traveled award for the last 4 years, and we hope to be coming there for many more, because it's that much fun, and our team looks forward to it that much.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. Let's pretend that Oregon Ganymedes are not in the tournament. They're just, they're not there.
Yeah.
Who's going to win this year?
Gosh, that's a tough one. You know, you got to go with Canton or the Flat Rock team. They were the two finalists 2 years ago. And from what I've looked on Facebook, and they went to the Gettysburg tournament and just cleaned up. They're beating everybody pretty handily for the most part, and they're having a really good year. I would say that they're your favorites right now. Although it looks like the Lottie Daws have put together some good matches the last couple of weeks too. So we'll see.
Who are the two teams in your grouping?
You know, originally it was going to be the Cleveland Forest Cities and the Walker Tavern Wheels, but we were notified today that the Cleveland team has dropped out of the tournament and they've been replaced by the Chelsea Monitors. So we'll be playing Chelsea and the Walker Tavern as in our bracket.
So Walker Tavern, former champion.
Oh yeah.
Excellent club. Excellent manager, Jim Terwilliger.
Oh yeah. Great guys.
Future podcast guest, Jim Terwilliger. Crazy legs. I'm talking to you. You know, you're in for a treat with Chelsea. Had you had the pleasure of playing against Chelsea?
No, we have not. They were there like the first or second year we were at the tournament. We watched part of their games, but we've never played them yet.
So Honest John is the captain. Just a man among men. What a great, great guy. Chelsea, they do it right. You're going to play against some fine gentlemen. That is for sure. You will come away with much respect for the Chelsea club. I guarantee you that.
I've heard good things. So I've heard the same thing from other folks. I know that they won the award for best sportsmanship and several years ago when they were giving that award out there. And I heard good things about that then too, which is good. That's what we would do. Cause my team, we thrive on being good sports and being competitive, but being fun to play against. And that's our brand as well. So I look forward to that. That sounds great.
You know, since we're on, you know, kind of the week of the World Tournament, I normally ask some people for some on or off the field memories, but I'm going to ask you specifically for some maybe on the field or off the field memories from World Tournament.
Oh, there? Gosh. We were talking earlier and, we came there the first year. We had never played 1867 rules before. And looking at them on paper and trying to figure out strategies and all that good stuff is a different world. But we were up against the Columbus Capitals. We played an 8 o'clock a.m. game on Hawthorne Field. It was a misty, wet morning. And we got them. We drew them for the first game of our tournament. And they just literally just beat our brains out. And we started scoring runs late in the game, but I think they beat us like 24 to 12 or something like that. And we go, okay. And then we learned a lot. And then we won our next two games. And then we got into lower bracket. And who do we meet again? The Columbus Capitals, because they lost a game and they got dropped down to the lower division. And we came out, we scored 13 runs in the first two innings against them. And we're hitting the ball with abandon. And then the next inning, they came back and scored 13 runs in one inning, and then the game was over. And I said, all we did was make them mad. And they ended up beating us 24-13.
So
we learned. But the next year, we came back. We won our bracket. Year after that, we came back. We won our bracket. Year after that, we won the lower division championship. So we've gotten better and better and learned a lot. And it's a tournament that we look forward to every year. And I can't tell you how excited my guys are. We actually are practicing every week and going over the rules and going over all the intricacies that we don't usually get to do. And we are looking forward to being there on Saturday and playing again.
Oh boy, you're putting in all that practice time, you're going to start making all these teams nervous. I don't think they're doing the same thing. I think they use their games as practice.
I know. Well, we had a game last week, and then, you know, the hard part was this pandemic, a lot of the teams that we play around here folded during the pandemic and did not regroup. So I had a lot of holes in my schedule because a lot of teams ceased to exist. And it was, and so we were scrambling to get games, and a lot of the venues weren't sure if they were going to let us play until the last minute. So we didn't get a lot of our venues that we normally do. So that definitely was a hindrance during the summer because it's kind of unsure if it was going to happen. So,
hey, before I forget, I have to ask Iron Chest, how does that happen? How does that happen?
It's a nickname. I pitched in my early pitching. I took a couple line shot comebackers off my chest as a pitcher. And listen, hear that? That's my chest.
Is that an iron plate?
No, it's a really pronounced sternum.
So, but, were you trying to knock the ball down with your chest?
No, it was one of those, oh my God, I don't have a glove, what do I do? So you just spread your arms apart and take it. Body, you put your body to the ball, and that's what I did. So you knock it down with your body. That's what I did. But it's funny, I got this name, which people love my nickname, but it's just one of his names. You just got it. But we were playing a game at a park in Chicago a few years ago, and this is after I've had my nickname for several years, and they had three ball fields all lined up next to each other, and I was pitching on one of them, and this guy on this other field hit a line shot up the third base, up the first baseline. And I was standing on the mound, and I turned around, and somebody goes, heads up, and I looked up, and the ball hit me square in the chest on the fly from the next field over. And it just bounced, and I looked down and went, wow, good thing that wasn't a foot taller. It would have hurt me. And I walked over to the bench, and they said, Iron Chest. And I said, yep. And I lifted up my shirt, and you could see the stitches in my chest from the ball. Actually, you could see the X mark.
I don't know if that's so much Iron Chest. It could be magnet.
Magnet.
Like some sort of magnet you have in your chest.
No. But I was lucky because if it hit me in the face, I would have had some serious damage because it was a line drive fly ball from a long way away. So anyway, that's where I got the nickname. So it's just one of those things.
Hey, give everybody a description of that uniform you guys wear.
We wear sort of a steel gray uniform. This is an 1871 description. It in the paper said it. We wear a steel gray uniform, shirt and pants, knickers. We have a 9-button bib or shield front shirt with a red O in the middle of our chest. And then we have a gray cap with a red brim and a red stripe, and then gray and red striped socks. And these are historically accurate uniforms, and we've been wearing them for 16 years. K&P Weaver made them for us out of Connecticut, and they're a poly wool blend, and we sweat like pigs, but we look good.
You do. You know, you sent me a picture earlier today that I put up on my Facebook podcast page, and you do. You guys look clean. Clean. We probably not clean do. At the end of the day, but clean to start.
At the end of the game, we sweat a lot, but we've been using those uniforms for 16 years. I mean, every now and then we have somebody joins that needs a custom uniform, but we hand those uniforms down. Basically, you want to make the team? Do you wear a size this? Yeah, that's the uniform we have. But we've been. My wife is the. She's our equipment manager and seamstress and scorekeeper. So she takes care of the uniforms, and they've been kept up very well. And we take great pride in how we look. One of my pet peeves in vintage baseball is players that don't wear matching uniforms, or they wear their shirt tails out while they play. It drives me crazy. Nobody in the 1800s would ever be caught dead in public with their shirt tail hanging out. So I make sure my guys know I'm a nut about tuck a shirt tail in. It's not a party dress. we always try to match and look really as sharp as we can and play as well as we can and be gentlemen. That's, like I said, that's our mantra.
Let's talk about that first pet peeve you have, the matching uniforms. Now, I am no historian. Let me say that before I say this next comment. Don't you think it would be kind of common that they'd have not matching uniforms back in the 1850s and 60s?
You would have them if it was a brand new team. they would probably all match for a while. They might not wear the same cap. Depends on how much money they had, too, if they could afford to have somebody make them a nice uniform. But the team pictures I see, you see a lot of matching uniforms. At least they start out that way. And that's what we try to image. Maybe they just had their picture made after they just got them from the tailor. I don't know. But you do see a lot of teams with really nice matching uniforms.
I was just throwing it out there as devil's advocate.
I'm sure there's scruffier teams where the guy showed up and he says, I lost my hat. I had to wear this one. Or my socks are dirty and, things like that. But
all the teams I've been on really put a lot of effort into their look.
Yeah.
But there has, mismatched socks happens a lot. Mismatched hats happens a lot. But the core stays the same, so.
Yeah, I mean, you try. I mean, there are teams most of the teams at the tournament have pretty nice-looking uniforms, so most of them do.
How many players you got on the roster right now?
Come into the tournament, we have 13. I had a couple that were injured, I have a squad. Like I said, all but one of the players on my team are Oregon high school graduates, which was kind of unusual. That all these guys play baseball at the same little high school. We only have 500 people in our high school, but different years, obviously. But they range from the mid to late 30s to their early 40s. Most of them are. But I have two players that moved away and fly in. One flies in from Dallas, Texas, and the other flies in from Phoenix, Arizona, just to play in this tournament.
Oh, my son lives in Phoenix. He could have just hitched a ride with him.
There you go. He
rode back. Oh.
So I have guys that actually will fly in from out of town just because they're really good players, and they come just for this tournament because they like it so much, and we're happy to have them.
Okay, so now I'm going to quiz you. You got 13 players on your roster for World Tournament this weekend. I want you to name all 13, including their nickname.
Including their nickname. Okay, we got Steve Scoop Tilton at first base. We got Justin Butter Early at second base, and Tim at two base Strohecker. He's at second base as well. They'll rotate. At shortstop, we got Brett Shifty Rogers. At third base, we got Dollar Bill Roshai. Pitching is Aaron Tubitzberg. Catching is Tom the Dandy Lesniak. Center field is going to be Ryan Morty Mortlock. Left field is Kevin the Kid Stafford. Right field is going to be Eric the Liberator Berg and Tom Teabag Thomas. And then we also have Jamie All In Throw as a rover is our other one. So that's our team. Pretty good, huh?
what position does Teabag play?
He plays right field.
Oh, good.
He's a rotate.
I'm just glad he's not playing a base that you have to slide into. hey,
so that's my team.
You are still playing at the very young an energetic age of 67 years old. Tell me about your
occasionally.
Tell me about your injury history.
Oh, that's one thing. Now I've only played one game this season. When I have 13 guys come and they're all half my age, I let them play.
Sure.
And I umpire or I just manage from the bench and give advice, which is fine with me. I mean, I like to be in there. But the last few years, as you know, the older you get, the longer it takes to recover. So that's the one thing. I mean, it used to take 2 days to recover. It usually takes, you're not ready to play against until Thursday if you play on Sunday. You can't play back-to-back games very easily. But the last few years, I've never had injuries that I needed cast or crutches, thank goodness. But, I badly strained my Achilles tendon and couldn't push off on it for like 3 months. I was catching one game and there's a pop-up behind home plate, and I ran into this really big umpire, and we knocked each other's down, and I cracked the rib. It's tennis elbow or just a tendonitis in my throwing arm, things like that. A lot of jammed fingers, a torn abdominal muscle, swinging a bat too fast, things like that. But none of them were debilitating where I had to miss work or anything like that.
So it's funny you bring up how long it takes to recover as you get older. I deliver beer for my occupation. So when I play, I don't have time to recover because I have to go and roll out the barrels, the next day. And so actually I'm done playing actively at Ohio Cup this year, my last time taking the field as a player, because that's it. I just can't recover. I can't recover. I'm only hitting 50. So you're 67.
Well, Matt, I started this team when I was 50 and played actively and ran like a maniac and did all that stuff. And, you people would see me at work on Monday and are going, as I'm hobbling down the hall, they said, "Oh, have a game this weekend?" I said, "Oh yeah." And then by Wednesday, I was starting to feel better. And then we can't play back-to-back weekends very often. Most of my younger players can't recover that quickly. In two-game tournaments, we're bringing 13 because somebody's going to get hurt or pull something, and we're going to need 13 players.
Oh, absolutely. So, oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I hope I'm not one of them. I'm the Capitals this weekend. I've been blessed with very good health during my vintage baseball career. Just minor, very minor stuff, but
yeah, my stuff was minor. It sounded hard, but none of it was that bad. I mean, you would never know I was hurt.
I can't run fast enough or hit hard enough to really hurt myself anyway. So I'm pretty safe.
Yeah.
Tell me some about some of the other events that you guys you go to on a normal basis every year.
Well, every year we play. Like I said, we tend to go Northern Illinois, Southern Wisconsin, sometimes St. Louis. But we will go to Chicago a lot. There's a park called Cantini Park that they have a Northern Illinois baseball festival. We do that every year. We play at some minor league stadiums over on the Mississippi River. The Quad City River Bandits have a minor leagues team, and we usually play an exhibition match before in the big stadium before their games, which is fun. Get to play in Big Boy Field. We go to a lot of museums and festivals and historic towns, and we look for games that have really cool venues. And we're looking for historic towns or a team that has a nice vintage field that has some character. That's what we like to do, is go to these little places that for the experience is what we want. And sometimes we go to Civil War reenactments and things like that. So it varies. Every year we try to do something different to keep it fresh.
The Quad Cities Minor League Baseball team, is that in the same league as the Great Lakes Loons?
I think they might. Yeah, they play Great Lakes, a lot of teams from Wisconsin, Iowa.
The Fort Wayne Tin Cat?
Fort Wayne, yeah, yep.
Yeah, I live right by the Great Lakes Loons. That's a great stadium they have here in Midland, Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah, this one's in Davenport, Iowa, and it's right on the Mississippi River. I mean, there's a bridge. You can see the bridge going over the Mississippi River in the outfield. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful stadium.
give me a vintage baseball player in your area, your neck of the woods, that is not on your club that you can't get enough of watching play baseball.
Okay, there's a kid. There's a team near us. They're the Regulators of Creston, Illinois. They're about 45 minutes south of us. Creston Regulators, great vintage club. We always open against them. We always play them two or three times during the season. They have a player on their team. His nickname is Krusty, but he's a younger guy. He's tall and skinny, and he plays without shoes. He does not wear shoes or stockings. He plays barefoot, and he plays center field. He's tall and lanky, and he's really, really fast. And we, in our opening game this year, no lie, we hit bombs over his head into the gap. He ran down five fly balls and caught them diving one-handed catches on the fly in one game. And he's that fast without shoes. He's just amazing. And every game we just go, oh, my God. You know, Krusty's hands are where triples go to die. So like Willie Mays' glove. But he is the one player we love to watch from the Creston Regulators. And like I said, I don't know anybody else in the country that plays barefoot. This guy does.
I've seen a couple, and it makes me nervous.
Oh, it makes me nervous, especially when you're at the bases.
But, what if there's just something out there? It doesn't even have to be a foreign object. What if there's a stick?
a rock? Somebody stepping on you. I mean, there's just all kinds of ways that could go bad.
These guys get going with a full head of steam. You're like,
I know, but he doesn't play infield, but he does run the bases. So there is a chance for him getting cleated by somebody. Yeah, it's very possible.
Yeah, that freaks me out. Hey, tell me about this project that you are doing with your wife. You bought 2 acres on each side of your house, and you're restoring it. Tell everybody what you're doing with your wife.
Okay. My wife and I, we live about a mile and a half from town, and we have a house out in the country, and we bought land, an acre on each side of us, that was old farmland, and we're restoring it back to its natural ecosystem. So we're turning one part of it into Illinois prairie. Illinois was known as the prairie state. So tall grass prairie plants were here originally. So we're turning this old pasture into prairie plants. So we have burnt it off. We have seeded it. We are pulling weeds. We're getting rid of little trees, and we're bringing in native seed and little tiny prairie plants and flowers and grasses, and we're restoring it. Another section is an oak hickory forest that is covered with invasive honeysuckle and all sorts of nasty alien plants that were brought here by mistake by early settlers. We are pulling all those out and restoring this native oak hickory forest. We're planting oak trees, and we're going in there and chopping out all the bad stuff. And so this is, and we're restoring it to how it would have looked prior to European settlement when the Native Americans were running the place. So, and it's beautiful. Plants, native wildlife, butterflies, bees, all that kind of stuff is coming back. It's just, that's our hobby. That's what we do on weekends.
How much time have you put in on that?
Oh, we started we just bought this additional land. We were restoring some. We've been doing it for 17 years.
Oh.
But we started in earnest last year restoring all this land. Well, you know, we pulled out 9 truckloads of barbed wire fence. And pulled out the fence post all by hand, hauled it away. I mean, it's a lot of work, but we took before and after pictures. It's going to be, this is something we're going to do for a long time. And hopefully whoever takes the land after us will keep it up because it's a lot of work, but it looks beautiful. It's kind of a fun hobby.
Harder to recover from, baseball or landscaping?
I don't know. Landscaping can be tough. I mean, bending over and pulling weeds for several hours does a number on you too. But anyway, but you do see results. So,
how much longer do you think you're gonna? Do you have any aspirations to buy more land and to continue this?
We were lucky enough that the family next to us that owned they owned the land all around us. They own us on 3/4. The matriarch of the family decided to sell, so that there's 25 acres behind us, but we couldn't afford to buy all 25 acres. So we bought enough to give us a nice buffer around our house, and we're just going to work with what we have. Unfortunately, I can't afford to buy 25 acres, and there's no way we could restore that, the two of us. It would take years and years and years and years that we probably wouldn't have able to finish.
You need to start a nonprofit and get a grant from the state.
There you go. Well, that's what my other job is, my real job. So I work for the Byron Forest Preserve District. We take care of natural lands here in the area. I'm the superintendent of education, and I teach people how to take care of land, and that's what I do for a living. So that is my day job.
So do you have anything to do with dealing with campers or any of that, or are you like more of a classroom situation?
It's a little of both. We have like 2,400 acres of forest preserves in Illinois are a unique thing. Back in 1913, the state of Illinois came up with the idea of we need to save green space in these natural areas before it all gets developed and turned into urban sprawl and farmland. So they set up taxing district for individual communities to buy up nice areas of trees and prairies and wetlands to protect them forever so that they wouldn't get developed, so that people would have green space and these natural areas for future generations to enjoy. So we put trails in, but I do education programs for the public. I do school programs, outreach programs, lectures. We do hunter education programs. We do how to restore the prairie in your own backyard programs. We have a history museum and a natural history museum of prairie education. I have a 85 kid preschool that does nature-based education out of our preschool. So we actually teach 3 to 5 year olds about nature. So I have a really wide gamut of education ways that we teach people, and special events and all kinds of things like that. So I have a really great job, and that's what I do for a living, and it's wonderful.
Answer me this. The forest or rivers and lakes, which one do selfish campers destroy more?
Gosh, that's a tough one. They're doing a number on both. And a lot of them, it's not knowing any better. There's just so much damage that has already been done by bad decisions of didn't realize that this would pollute the rivers or kill the fish. I didn't realize that bringing in these types of plants were going to take over and that the native plants were going to, you know, die off and disappear. There's just so much damage that's been done, but a lot of it's education. People don't know any better. They don't realize that how it's supposed to be or what it used to look like. So
is it education or ignorance? Like, I don't think they care.
Well, it's a combination. I think there's a great quote by actually H.G. Wells that he says, human history is a race between education and catastrophe. And he says it's a constant race between education and catastrophe. And you think about it, it's true for everything. People learn the hard way or they have no idea, and you're constantly trying to educate them before it's too late. So,
well, I think the United Nations just came out in 109 different countries, and their scientists all agree that it's too late for the climate change thing. It happened faster than we thought.
Oh yeah. And then, you know, and there's still deniers out there that don't believe it's true and that, you know, it's just a phase and, you know, and yeah, it is. They've been talking about this since the 70s. And that was back in the 70s. And we're still talking about it. Not doing too much.
It seems like everybody wants credit for the little bit that they do.
But I don't want to give up my car, and I don't want to give up flying in an airplane, and I don't want to give up air conditioning.
I do have to admit that when I've heard climate change over the years, I always say, that's too bad. That's something awful my kids and grandkids are going to have to deal with. But you know, it turns out I was wrong because it's here now. So I guess I do have to deal with it.
And it does affect you. I mean, these horrible storms we're having, the heat waves, it's just, you know, unprecedented weather happening all over the world. It's like, you know, today where it was incredibly hot here, we're having these killer thunderstorms going through. And it is just that, you know, this is going to happen more and more and more. And it's going to cost people more and more money to fix the damage. So it's going to get you one way or another. But it's true. It's an inconvenience.
Yeah, I was looking at the radar about the rain that's going to come through here tonight. And there's so much red.
It is
such a long line of red.
It's huge. It already passed us. We were fine. You know, we had 60, 70 mile an hour winds, but it's quite a storm. It's supposed to happen again tomorrow. You know, it's just really hot, too fast, too much. And this is how it takes care of itself. That's how weather cools down, giant storms.
So. Yeah. Hey, every morning at 5 a.m., you work out. You consider yourself a workout nut.
Yeah.
What does a workout look for you every morning?
What do I do? I get up, crack of dawn, get dressed in the dark so I don't wake my wife up. Go down to the fitness. We have a wonderful fitness center in town. And I do free weights. I do cardio. I run around the track. I do a lot of stretching. And I just try to maintain a good muscle mass so I don't hurt myself in my daily routine and playing vintage baseball. And I think that's one of the reasons I've been able to stay in shape. I was in good enough shape that I didn't have a bad back. I didn't pull a lot of muscles or hurt myself. I was strong enough that I didn't hurt myself as much as I could have. So a lot of my players would say I don't run fast anyway, so it didn't matter. But I think it does help you. It helps you day to day things that you do around the house, lifting and toting and things that you have to do that that you don't do very often. If you don't use the muscles, you tend to hurt yourself sometimes.
So. Yeah, I tend to let my job take care of that for me. My workout routine involves pizza and beer, and that's why I really appreciate
it or delivering it.
Just getting it. I appreciate getting things delivered to me too, as well as delivering them. And I appreciate a good bound match that allows me to do things like still play the outfield once in a while, things I'd never be able to do in a fly match because the pizza and the beer have taken over. So, and I'm really not fighting it anymore, Mark. I'm just letting it go. I'm just letting it happen naturally.
You're just being a good American.
I mean, we do pizza so wrong and I don't care.
Now the key is happiness and feeling good, and then you're fine. You're getting more exercise than most.
You started out on the East Coast and made the decision to move to a small town. What were the circumstances around that?
Well, I was living in the Washington D.C. area, in suburban Washington D.C. My wife and I, we had an infant and a 2-year-old, and I got we were going through a small recession, and I was working for a parks operation there that said, we're downsizing and we're going to give everybody 6 months a buyout. We'll give you 6 months pay and 6 months medical coverage if you take this buyout. And I said, give it to me. And started looking around the country and started going and looking at places. And there was a job opening here in Oregon at Northern Illinois University basically teaching environmental education. And I said, we went out and looked at it. I said, this is great. Small town, lower cost of living, nice small school district. I said, this is a great place to raise a kid. So we moved out and adopted this town and made it our own. And we've moved here, it was like 28 years ago, and never looked back. It's been great. And then, like I said, I'd read an article in Smithsonian Magazine back in the 90s about vintage baseball. It was a cover picture. I don't know if you've ever seen that art, that issue of Smithsonian.
Mm-hmm.
But it talked about them playing vintage baseball in New York and Central Park and on Long Island. And then I saw that there were a couple teams around here, and then I started looking into starting a team out here. So that's how it got started.
You have an interesting story. As a Major League Baseball fan, some teams in multiple sports go through the pain and the sadness of losing one team.
Yes.
Mark, you went through the pain and sadness of losing two teams. How did that affect you as a baseball fan?
I grew up a Washington Senators fan, and my dad and I would go to games in Washington to watch the Senators. And when I was young, the Senators left and became the Minnesota Twins. I took Harmon Killebrew and all these people, and they moved to Minnesota and started the Twins organization. And we were just heartbroken. But a few years later, they got another franchise, got the Washington Senators again. And lo and behold, in 1971, they moved and become the Texas Rangers. And so we lost them a second time. And I to be perfectly honest, my father was heartbroken. He was a huge baseball fan, and some of my earliest memories of going to ballparks with him in Washington to go see the Senators play. I remember playing the Yankees and the Senators. And anyway, but we gave up. We started becoming Baltimore Orioles fans, which is a little fairly close, but it was an hour up the road. But then the Nationals finally got a game, but it took them a long time to get one back. But to be perfectly honest, I haven't been following them. They're too far away to get the local news every day like you'd like. And moved here to the Chicago area. I like the Cubs. I'm glad they won, but I'm not really a Cubs or White Sox fan. I'm sort of a transplant. I never adopted them that much. But we were excited when the Cubs won just because they finally got done with it. But now they've sold off their team and they're back to square one. So
That is very true. Hypothetically speaking, you don't move. You stay in Washington, D.C. You lose the Senators to the Twins. You lose the Senators again to the Rangers. And then eventually the Nationals show up. Do you have any emotional pull that you can give to the Nationals? Or are you just at that point just spent?
It's not as much. But, yeah, like I said, that's where I grew up. I mean, my father was a huge Washington fan. probably would have. I mean, I was thrilled they won the World Series. And they had a good run, and it was fun to watch them. But it's just like I said, when you're a Cubs fan right here, if you're even where we are, you're either a Cubs fan or a St. Louis fan, and that's what all the media and the papers and all the local sports stations talk about. You don't hear much about Washington, so it makes it harder. That's all. You have to go online to learn anything.
This year, shouldn't they be talking about the White Sox?
Yeah, they are. And, you know, there are begrudgingly a lot of people. Everybody became a Cubs fan when Cubs won, and the White Sox sort of fell off. And the White Sox have been good. I mean, they hadn't been that long since they've won a World Series. I mean, but they, yeah, they're an up-and-coming team. But I think people still like the Cubs better. I really do.
You know, I just, I have a different opinion about the Cubs. When they won, I think they lost fans.
Really?
I think that
the lovable losers.
The lovable losers. Everyone was a Cubs fan. They just wanted them to win. And once they won, everyone's like, okay, you won.
I know. I know what. You couldn't get tickets for a long time, and now you can get tickets again. So you're right. For a long time, you couldn't get a ticket to a home game for the Cubs for years. It became a pretty hard ticket. In fact, people would go up to Miller Park and up in Milwaukee to see a Cubs game against the Brewers because it was easier to get tickets there than it was in a Chicago home game. So anyway.
College football season right around the corner. You are a college football fan.
Love it.
How excited are you?
I like it. You know, my wife went to Auburn University in Alabama. And so we dated, and I was down there going to school. So I went to a lot of Auburn and Alabama games, and I love the SEC. So that I'm not a Big Ten guy. I'm a SEC fan. So I love college football. And like I said, my wife is her cousin played for Bear Bryant. He was he played at Alabama, and her side of the family all went to Auburn. Auburn, Alabama is like it's like Green Bay, Chicago. I mean, they hate each other. But Alabama doesn't have any pro sports, so that's the only thing they can talk about. So
it's true, very true. I am a Big Ten fan, Michigan State fan. So you know, we tailgate and all that stuff every year. I do agree, the Big Ten. It's not always fun to watch. I mean, go to a Big Ten game, and I say at least 7 times a game, why are you running it there? It's 3rd and 5, and you're running it?
I know, because that's what you always do.
But
it's hard-nosed, bruising football. That's what they do.
But go green, go white. I love you.
Yeah.
Okay. you're in Northern Illinois country. That's MAC territory. I hear a lot of good things about MAC play.
Oh, MAC, you know, MAC play around here for a while there. Northern Illinois University had a great football program. They were down last year, but they play MAC teams. I mean, they were beating SEC teams. They were beating Big Ten teams. They've upset a lot of good. I mean, they've beat Wisconsin, they beat Iowa, they beat Northwestern. I mean, they are beating a lot of Big Ten teams. They even went down 1 year and beat Alabama before Nick Saban got there. But they're a really good local football team. And the MAC is fun. It's a fun conference. And again, I was working for them for a while, and so that's how I got intrigued with. I got there on the upswing of the Northern Illinois Huskies football program. So yes, they're the closest good football team around here for college, at least.
So do you end up going to a lot of Northern Illinois games because you can't really go to SEC games whenever you want?
No, not anymore. No, occasionally. I have a friend that gets tickets and we go occasionally. It's really easy to get seats. it's not Big Ten fans, trust me.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's, you know.
Did you just take a dig at the Big Ten again? Go green, go white.
I'm sorry. Everybody talks about, oh, the Big Ten, the Big Ten. I'm going, yeah, but what have they done lately?
How dare you? Yeah. That's all right. I understand. Yeah. I'm a realist. I understand.
Yeah.
Okay, Mark, it's the part of the show where I give you the old pepper. And what that is I'm just going to give you random questions, and you just give the quick answer, and we go through about 10 of these.
Okay.
Oh, I even have a song for it. That's how professional I am. Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
I want you to name an overrated condiment.
Oh, an overrated condiment. Wow, I would say mayonnaise.
Who is your favorite serial killer?
Serial killer? Oh, I like Hannibal Lecter.
What was your first car?
My first car was a Dodge Dart Swinger. 1971 Dodge Dart Swinger.
I have to write that down. I have to look that car up. Can you tell me your favorite soup?
My favorite what?
Soup.
Soup. Oh, it's got to be chicken noodle.
What is a household chore that you don't mind doing?
Don't mind doing. I don't mind cutting the grass.
What is your favorite game show?
Favorite game show? Jeopardy.
What would your death row last meal be?
Wow. Death row last meal. It would be, barbecue. A pulled pork barbecue and collard greens.
If you could only keep one of your senses, what would it be?
Oh, gee, I've got to have sight.
What is your favorite midnight snack?
Midnight snack. I will say it is vanilla ice cream.
Who's your favorite Major League Baseball player of all time?
Of all time? Wow, that's a tough one. All time. I got to think. There's just so many choices. Who do I want to go? Oh, I'm going to go with the Baltimore. Cal Ripken Jr.
Overrated. What is your what is your favorite vegetable?
My favorite vegetable is kale.
Do you use shampoo and conditioner separate, or is it all in the same bottle?
Oh, it's all in the same bottle. And if you saw my hair, you'd realize I used a bottle that lasts a year.
What is the best place to eat breakfast at in Oregon?
In Oregon? I would say it's the Sunrise Restaurant, the best place in Oregon.
And lastly, give me your Mount Rushmore of your favorite pizza items.
Pizza items?
Yes.
Pizza items. Okay. You gotta put pepperoni, you gotta put sausage, you gotta put onion, and you gotta put bell peppers.
I wasn't expecting onion, but then when you said bell pepper, I mean, it really goes together pretty well.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Well, we did it, Mark.
We did it. Awesome.
Mark, Iron Chest, Herman. Oh, my God. If I see you this weekend and you're going to hear that, you're going to know who's saying it.
No, we're looking forward to it. We have our first game. We'll be there Saturday morning. I think we have our first game at 12:30. So, and the weather looks awesome. It looks like it's going to be like 81 degrees and cooler and sunny. So it looks like no chance of rain. So everything looks like a wonderful weekend for the tournament. I'm looking forward to it.
Now, do any of your guys stay at the Pink Palace? The
best. We all stay at the Pink Palace.
Okay,
it's part of the experience.
It is. You're going to be out at the Pavilion on Saturday night, aren't you?
Yes. We usually wander out there sometime during the evening.
So I'll be in the bar from 6:30 until 10 recording. So stop in and say hi to me, would you?
I would love to. I look forward to it. I will definitely look you up and bring by some of my guys. We got to pick up some people at the airport, but we'll come by.
And yeah, come and say hi before everybody starts going crazy out there and they all get, eventually management has to come out and send us all back to our hotel rooms. That happens every year.
Really? I've never stayed that long, but it doesn't surprise me.
It absolutely happens. Oh, okay. That's sad. Hey, stay on the line for me so I can say goodbye to you in a proper manly way. And
okay.
And I want to thank everybody who listened. This was Mark Herman from the Oregon Ganymedes participating in this week's World Tournament. I want to thank everybody for all the crazy amount of downloads for the Anthony Canino episode I just did this last weekend from the Brooklyn Atlantics. Wow, that is on its way to being my most downloaded episode ever. So thank you for that. Like I was telling Mark, I am at the Pink Palace.
Best Western.
Yeah. In Dearborn, I guess, officially.
I think it's Allen Park. I think it's the official address.
Stop arguing with me, Mark. And everybody knows what I'm talking about anyway. If you're listening to this, you know what everybody means by Pink Palace. But 6:30 to 10 in the bar, and then I'll probably go out and really start pounding a few pudding shots at my wife's brain or something for out at the pavilion. Before the craziness starts, because I'm too old for that kind of nonsense. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see a lot of you this weekend.